he said softly.
I have missed you,
and laid his face for a moment against her breast.
And I you, my dear, she said.
And when all have gone to rest this night, I shall prove it to you.
Why do you think have I arranged that you should have a guest chamber to yourself, when even Arthur's dearest companions have had to be housed four to a room, and sometimes two to a bed?
He said,
I thought it was so that none other need share quarters with me.
And so it shall be for the dignity of Avalon, said Morgaine,
though even Taliesin shares his chamber with the bishop. I do not admire his taste, said Kevin. I would sooner be housed in the stable with the other donkeys.
I would have it that the Merlin of Britain should be lodged in a chamber to himself, even if it is no bigger than a stall for one of those donkeys, said Morgaine.
But it is large enough for you and for my lady, and,
she smiled and looked pointedly at the bed,
and for me, I dare say.
You will always be welcome, and if my lady is jealous, I will turn her face to the wall.
He kissed her, holding her tight for a moment with all the strength in his wiry arms. Then, letting her go, he said,
I thought you would like to hear. I rode with your son to Avalon. He is a well-grown lad, and a clever one, and has some of your gift for music.
I dreamed of him the other night, she said. In my dream, I think he played on a pipe, like Gawain's.
Then you dream truly, said Kevin. I like him well, and he has the sight. He will be schooled in Avalon for a druid.
And then?
Then? Ah, my dear, said Kevin, things must go as they will. But I doubt not he will make a bard, and a notable wise man. You need have no fear for him upon Avalon.
He touched her shoulder gently.
He has your eyes.
She would have liked to ask more, but turned to something else.
The feast will not be till tomorrow, she said. But tonight the closest of Arthur's friends and companions have been bidden to dine. Gareth is to be made a knight upon the morrow, and Arthur, who loves Gawain like a brother, has chosen to honour him at a family party.
Gareth is a good man and a good knight, said Kevin, and I will gladly do him honour. I like not Queen Morgause greatly, but her sons are fine men, and good friends to Arthur.
Even though it was a family party, there were many close kinsmen to sit at Arthur's table here on the eve of Pentecost. Guinevere and her kinswoman Elaine, and Elaine's father, King Pellinore, and her brother, Lamorack, Taliesin and Lancelot, and three of Lancelot's half-brothers, Balin, son of the Lady of the Lake, and Bors, and Lionel, both of whom were sons of Ban of Less Britain. Gareth was there, and as always Gawain stood behind Arthur at table. Arthur had protested as they came into the hall.
Sit here beside us tonight, Gawain. You are my kinsman, and king in your own right in Orkney. And I like it not that you should stand like a serving man behind my place.
Gawain said roughly,
I'm proud to stand and serve my lord and king, sir.
And Arthur bent his head.
You make me feel like those old Caesars, he complained. Need I be guarded night and day, even in my own hall? For the dignity of your throne, sir, you are even as those Caesars and more, insisted Gawain.
And Arthur laughed helplessly.
I can deny nothing to those of you who were my companions. So,
Kevin said in an undertone to Morgaine, where they sat side by side,
it is not hubris, then, or arrogance, but he wishes only to please his companions.
I think truly it is so,
Morgaine said in an undertone.
This he loves best, I think, to sit in his own hall, and look upon the peace he has wrought. Whatever his faults,
Arthur truly loves the rule of order and the kingdom of law. Later, Arthur gestured them all to silence, calling young Gareth to him.
"Tonight you will watch in the church by your arms," he said, "and in the morning before Mass, whichever night you choose, shall make you one of my companions. You have served me well and honourably, young as you are. If you wish for it, I will myself make you knight, but I will understand if you wish that your brother should give you this honour."
Gareth wore a white tunic. His hair was like a golden halo curling around his face. He looked almost like a child, a tall child towering to a good 6 feet high, with shoulders like a young bull. His face was fuzzy with soft golden down, too fine to be shaven. He said, stammering a little in his eagerness,
"Sir, I beg you, I mean no offence to you, nor to my brother, but I, if he will, could I be made knight by Lancelot?"
"My lord and my king."
Arthur smiled.
"Why, if Lancelot will have it so, I have no objection."
Morgain remembered a little child prattling of Lancelot to a painted wooden knight she had carved for him. How many people, she wondered, saw such a childhood dream come true? Lancelot said gravely,
"I should be honoured, cousin."
And Gareth's face lighted as if a torch had been set to it. Then Lancelot turned to Gawain and said with punctilious courtesy,
"But it is for you to give me leave, cousin. You stand in a father's place to this lad, and I would not usurp your right."
Gawain looked awkwardly from one to the other of them, and Morgain saw Gareth bite his lip. Only now, perhaps, did he understand that this might be seen as an offence to his brother, and that the king had done him the honour of offering to make him a knight, an honour he had refused. What a child he was, despite his great strength and height, and precocious skill at arms. Gawain said gruffly,
"Who would be made knight by me when Lancelot would consent to do it?"
Lancelot flung an exuberant arm around each of them.
"You do me too much honour, both of you. Well, go, lad," he said, releasing Gareth. "Go to your arms. I will come and watch with you after midnight."
Gawain watched as the boy loped away with his long, awkward stride, and then said,
"You should be one of those old Greeks, as was told in that saga we read when we were boys. How was he called? Achilles? Whose true love was the young knight Patroclus, and neither cared anything for all the fine dames of the court of Troy. God knows every lad in this court worships you as their hero. Pity you have no mind to the Greek fashion in love."
Lancelot's face turned dusky red.
"You are my cousin, Gawain, and can say such things to me. I would not hear such things from any other, even in jest."
Gawain laughed loudly again.
"Aye, a jest, for one who professes devotion only to our most chaste queen. You dare?"
Lancelot began, turning on him, and gripped his arm with strength enough to break his wrist. Gawain struggled, but Lancelot, though he was the smaller man, bent his arm backward, growling with rage like an angry wolf.
"Here! No brawling in the king's hall!"
Kai thrust himself awkwardly between them, and Morgain said quickly, "Why, Gawain, what then will you say to all those priests who profess devotion to Mary the Virgin beyond all things on earth? Would you have it they all have a scandalous, carnal devotion to their Christ? And indeed, we hear of the Lord Jesus that he never married, and that even among his chosen 12 there was one who leaned on his bosom at supper." Guinevere gave a shocked cry. "Morgain, hush! Such a blasphemous jest!" Lancelot let go of Gawain's arm. Gawain stood rubbing the bruise, and Arthur turned and frowned at them.
You are like children, cousins, squabbling and bickering. Shall I send you to be beaten by Kai in the kitchens? Come now, be friends again. I heard not the jest, but whatever it was, Lance, it cannot have been so serious as all that.
Gawain laughed roughly and said,
I jested, Lance. All too many women pursue you, I know, for what I said to have anything at all of truth.
And Lancelot shrugged and smiled, like a bird with ruffled feathers. Kai chuckled.
Every man at court envies you your handsome face, Lance.
He rubbed the scar that pulled his mouth up tight into a sneer and said,
But it may not be all that much of a blessing, eh, cousin?
It dissolved into good-natured laughter. But later, Morgaine, crossing the court, saw Lancelot still pacing, troubled, feathers still ruffled.
What is it, kinsman? What ails you?
He sighed.
I would that I might leave this court.
But my lady will not let you go.
Even to you, Morgaine, I will not talk of the queen, he said stiffly.
And it was Morgaine's turn to sigh. I am not the keeper of your conscience, Lancelot. If Arthur doesn't chide you, who am I to speak a word of reproach?
You don't understand, he said fiercely. She was given to Arthur like something bought at market, part of a purchase in horses because her father would have kinship with the High King as part of the price. Yet she is too loyal to murmur.
I spoke no word against her, Lancelot, Morgaine reminded him. You hear accusations from yourself, not from my lips.
She thought, I could make him desire me. But the knowledge was like a mouthful of dust. Once she had played that game, and beneath the desire he had feared her, as he feared Vivian herself, feared her to the edge of hatred because of that desire.
If his king commanded, he would have her, but would soon come to hate.
He managed to look directly at her.
You cursed me, and believe me, I am cursed.
And suddenly the old anger and contempt melted. He was as he was. She clasped his hand between her own. Cousin, don't trouble yourself about that. It was many, many years ago, and I don't think there is any god or goddess who would listen to the words of an angry young girl who thought herself scorned. And I was no more than that. He drew a long breath and began to pace again. At last he said,
I could have killed Gawain tonight. I'm glad you stopped us, even with that blasphemous jesting. I have had to deal with that all my life. When I was a boy at Ban's court, I was prettier than Gareth is now, and in the court of Less Britain, and like enough in other places, such a boy must guard himself more carefully than any maiden. But no man sees or believes any such thing unless it touches him, and thinks it only a slightly vulgar joke made about other people. There was a time when I thought it so too. And then a time when I thought I could never be otherwise.
There was a long silence while he stared grimly at the flagstones of the courtyard.
And so I flung myself into experiment with women. Any woman, God help me, even with you, who were my own mother's fosterling and pledged maiden to the goddess. But there were few women who could rouse me even a little till I saw her.
Morgaine was glad he didn't speak Guinevere's name.
And since that moment there has been no other. With her, I know myself all man.
Morgaine said,
But she is Arthur's wife.
God, God!
Lancelot turned and struck his hand against the wall.
Do you think that doesn't torment me? He is my friend. If Guinevere were wedded to any other man who dwells this earth, I would have had her away with me into my own place.
Morgaine saw the muscles of his throat move as he tried to swallow.
I do not know what will become of us, and Arthur must have an heir to his kingdom. The fate of all Britain is more important than our love. I love them both. And I am tormented, Morgaine, tormented.
His eyes were wild. For a moment it seemed to Morgaine that she saw some hint of madness. Ever after, she wondered, was there anything, anything I could have said or done that night?
Tomorrow, Lancelot said, I shall beg Arthur to send me out on some difficult quest. To go and make an end forever of Pellinore's dragon. To conquer the wild Northmen beyond the Roman wall. I care not what, Morgaine. Anything, anything to take me away from here.
And for a moment, hearing in his voice a sadness beyond tears, Morgaine wanted to hold him in her arms and rock him at her breast like a babe.
I think I came near to killing Gawain tonight, had you not stopped us, Lancelot said. Yet he was only jesting. He would have died with horror if he knew.
Lancelot turned his eyes away, and at last said in a whisper,
I know not if what he said is true. I should take Guinevere and be gone from here, before it becomes a scandal to all the courts of the world, that I love the wife of my king. And yet it is Arthur I cannot leave. I know not but what I love her only because I come close, thus, to him.
Morgaine put out her hand to stop him. There were things she couldn't bear to know. But Lancelot didn't even see.
No, no, I must tell someone or I shall die of it.
Morgaine, know you how first I came to lie with the Queen?
I had loved her long, since first I saw her on Avalon. But I thought I would live and die with that passion unspent. Arthur was my friend, and I would not betray him, he said. And she, you must never think that she tempted me. But it was Arthur's will, he said. It came about at Beltane.
And then he told her, while Morgaine stood frozen, thinking only,
so this is how the charm worked. I would that the goddess had stricken me with leprosy before ever I gave it to Guinevere. But you do not know all, he whispered. As we lay together, never, never had anything so...
He swallowed and fumbled to put into words what Morgaine couldn't bear to hear.
I touched Arthur. I touched him. I love her. Oh, God, I love her. Mistake me not. But had she not been Arthur's wife? Had it not been for... I doubt even she...
He choked and couldn't finish his sentence, while Morgaine stood utterly still, appalled beyond speech. Was this, then, the revenge of the goddess, that she, who loved this man without hope, should become the confidant of both him and the woman he loved, that she should be the repository of all the secret fears he could speak to no one else? The incomprehensible passions within his soul.
Lancelot, you should not say these things to me. Not to me. Some man, Taliesin, a priest.
What can a priest know of this? He demanded in despair. No man, I think, has ever felt such... God knows I hear enough of what men desire. They talk of nothing else. And now and then some man reveals something strange he may desire, but never, never, nothing so strange and evil as this. I am damned, he cried out. This is my punishment for desiring the wife of my king. That I should be held in this terrible bondage, even Arthur, if he knew, would hate and despise me. He knows I love Guinevere, but this not even he could forgive. And Guinevere, who knows if she, even she, would not hate and despise me.
His voice choked into silence. Morgain could only say the words she had been taught in Avalon. The goddess knows what is in the hearts of men, Lancelot. She will comfort you.
But this is to spurn the goddess, Lancelot whispered in frozen horror. And what of the man who sees that same goddess in the face of the mother who bore him? I cannot turn to her. Almost I am tempted to go and throw myself at the feet of the Christ. His priests say he can forgive any sin, however damnable, as he spoke words of forgiveness to those who crucified him. Morgain said sharply that she had never seen any sign that his priests were so tender and forgiving with sinners.
Aye, no doubt you are right, said Lancelot, staring bleakly at the flagstones. There is no help anywhere, till I am slain in battle, or ride forth from here to throw myself in the path of a dragon.
He poked with his shoe at a little clump of grass that was growing up through the stones in the courtyard.
And no doubt sin and good and evil are all lies told by priests and men. And the truth is only that we grow and die and wither, even as this grass here.
He turned on his heel.
Well, I will go and share Gareth's vigil, as I promised him. He at least loves me in all innocence, like a younger brother or my son. I should fear to kneel before that altar if I believed one word of what their priests say, damned as I am. And yet, how I wish there were such a God as could forgive me and let me know myself forgiven.
He turned to go, but Morgain caught at the embroidered sleeve of the festival gown he had put on.
Wait, what is this of a vigil in the church? I knew not that Arthur's companions had grown so pious.
Arthur thinks often of his king-making on Dragon Island, said Lancelot. And he said once that the Romans, with their many gods, and the old pagan folk, had something which was needed in life, that when men took on some great obligation, they should do it prayerfully, and be in mind of its great meaning and dedication. And so he spoke with the priests, and they have made it so in ritual, that when any new companion, not seasoned by battle, where he is tried by the very confrontation with death, when an unblooded man joins with the companions, there is this special testing, that he shall watch and pray all night by his arms, and in the morning confess all his sins and be shriven, and then be made knight.
Why, then it is a kind of initiation into the mysteries that he would give them.
But he is no maker of mysteries. He has no right to confer the mysteries on another or give initiation, and all garbled in the name of their Christ God.
In the name of the Mother will they even take over the mysteries? Lancelot answered defensively.
He consulted with Taliesin, who gave countenance to it.
And Morgain was startled that one of the highest druids would so compromise the mysteries. Yet there had been a time, so Taliesin said, when Christian and druid worshipped in common.
It is what happens in the soul of the man, said Lancelot. Not whether it is Christian or pagan or druid. If Gareth faces the mystery in his heart, and it makes him a better man in his soul, does it matter whence it comes, from the goddess or from Christ, or from that name the druids may not speak,
or from the very goodness within himself.
Why, you argue like Taliesin's very self, said Morgaine sourly.
Aye, I know the words.
His mouth twisted with terrible bitterness.
Would to God, any God, I could find something in my heart which believed them, or some such comfort as that.
Morgaine could only say, I would that you might, cousin. I will pray for you.
But to whom?
Lancelot asked, and went away, leaving Morgaine sorely troubled. It wasn't yet midnight. In the church you could see the lights where Gareth and now Lancelot kept vigil. She bent her head, remembering the night when she herself had kept watch, her hand automatically going to her side for the touch of a little crescent knife that hadn't hung there for many years.
And I cast it away. Who am I to speak of profaning the mysteries?
Then the air suddenly stirred and swelled like a whirlpool before her, and she felt she would sink down where she stood, for Vivian stood before her in the moonlight. She was older and thinner. Her eyes were like great burning coals set beneath her level brows, her hair almost all white now. She looked on Morgaine, it seemed, with sorrow and tenderness.
Mother,
she stammered, not knowing whether she spoke to Vivian or to the goddess. And then the image wavered, and Morgaine knew that Vivian wasn't there, ascending no more.
Why have you come? What do you want of me?
Morgaine whispered, kneeling, feeling the stir of Vivian's robes in the night wind. About her brow was a crown of wicker withies, like to the crown of the queen of the fairy country. The apparition stretched forth her hand, and Morgaine could feel the faded crescent burning on her brow.
The night watchman strode through the court, the light of his lantern flaring.
Morgaine knelt alone, staring at nothing. Hastily she scrambled to her feet before the man could see. She had lost, suddenly, all desire to go to Kevin's bed. He would be waiting for her, but if she didn't come, he would never think of reproaching her. She stole quietly through the hallways to the room she shared with Guinevere's unmarried maidens, and into the bed she shared with young Elaine.
I thought the sight forever gone from me.
Yet Vivian came to me and stretched out her hand.
Is it that Avalon has need of me?
Or does it mean that I, like Lancelot, am going mad? Chapter 3 When Morgaine woke, all around her the castle was already waking to the noise and confusion of a holiday. Pentecost. In the courtyard there were banners flying, and people were streaming in and out of the gates. Servants were setting up lists for the games. Pavilions were sprouting all over Camelot, and on the slopes of the hill like strange and beautiful flowers. There was no time for dreams and visions. Guinevere sent for her to dress her hair. No woman in all Camelot was so deft with her hands as Morgaine, and Morgaine had promised her that this morning she would braid the queen's hair in the special plaits with four strands which she herself used on high festivals. While she was combing out and separating Guinevere's fine silky hair for braiding, Morgaine glanced sideways at the bed from which her sister-in-law had risen. Arthur had already been dressed by his servants and gone out. The pages and chamberlains were spreading the covers, taking away soiled clothes to be cleaned and washed, laying out fresh gowns for Guinevere's approval. Morgaine thought,
they shared that bed, all three of them, Lancelot, Guinevere, Arthur.
No, such a thing wasn't wholly unknown. She remembered something in the fairy country that wouldn't come clear in her mind. Lancelot was tormented, and she could have no idea how Arthur regarded all this. As her small, quick hands moved on Guinevere's hair, she wondered what her sister-in-law felt. Suddenly her own mind was flooded with erotic images. Memory of that day on Dragon Island, when Arthur, waking, had drawn her into his arms. Of the night she had lain in Lancelot's arms in the field. She lowered her eyes and went on twisting the fine hair.
"You are pulling it too tight," Guinevere complained.
And Morgaine said stiffly, "I'm sorry," and forced her hands to relax. Arthur had been only a boy then, and she a maiden.
"Lancelot, did he give to Guinevere what he had withheld from her? Or was the queen content with those childish caresses?" Try as Morgaine would, she couldn't turn her mind from the hateful pictures that haunted it. But she went on calmly braiding, her face a mask.
"There, that will hold. Hand me the silver pin," she said, fastening up the braids. Guinevere surveyed herself, delighted, in the copper mirror which was one of her treasures.
"It is beautiful, dear sister. Thank you so much," she said, turning and impulsively embracing Morgaine, who stiffened in her arms.
"You owe me no thanks. It is easier to do on another's head than my own," Morgaine said.
"Wait, that pin is slipping."
And she refastened it. Guinevere was glowing, beautiful, and Morgaine put her arms around her, laying her cheek for a moment against Guinevere's. It seemed enough, for a moment, to touch that beauty, as if something of it could penetrate her and give her some of that glow and loveliness. Then she remembered again what Lancelot had told her, and thought, "I am no better than he. I, too, nurse all manner of strange and perverse desires, and who am I to mock at any?" She envied the queen, laughing happily as she directed Elaine to go to her chests and seek out cups for prizes for the winners of the games. Guinevere was simple and open. She was never tortured by these dark thoughts. Guinevere's griefs were simple, the griefs and troubles of any woman, fear for her husband's safety, grief over her childlessness. For all the charms working, there had been no sign of pregnancy. "If one man couldn't get her with child, it is likely that two couldn't," Morgaine thought wickedly.
Guinevere was smiling. "Shall we go down? I haven't greeted the guests. King Uriens is here from North Wales with his grown son. How would you like to be Queen of Wales, Morgaine? I have heard that Uriens will ask the king for a wife among his wards."
Morgaine laughed.
"You think I would make him a good queen because I'm not likely to give him a son to challenge Avaloc's claim to the throne? It is true you would be old to bear a first child," Guinevere said. "Yet I still have hope that I may give my lord and king an heir."
Guinevere didn't know that Morgaine had a child, and she should never know.
Yet it nagged at her.
Arthur should know that he has a son. He blames himself that he can give Guinevere no child. For his own peace of mind he should know. And if it should come to pass that Guinevere never bears a child, then at least the king has a son. None need know that it is his own sister's. And Gwydion bears the royal line of Avalon, and now he is old enough to be sent to Avalon and be made a druid. Truly I should have gone to look upon his face long before this day.
"Listen," said Elaine. "The trumpets are blowing in the courtyard. Someone important is here, and we must make haste. They will serve mass in the church this morning."
"And Gareth is to be knighted," said Guinevere. "It is a pity Lot didn't live to see his youngest son made knight." Morgaine shrugged. He took no great joy in Arthur's company, nor Arthur in his. So, she thought, Lancelot's protégé would be made one of the companions. And then she remembered what Lancelot had told her about the ritual watch and vigil of knighthood. The mockery of the mysteries. Is it my task to speak to Arthur about his duty to Avalon? He bore the image of the Virgin into battle at Mount Baden. He laid aside the dragon banner, and now he has turned one of the greater mysteries over to the Christian priests. I will seek counsel of Taliesin. We must go down, said Guinevere, and tied on her pockets at her waist, fastening her keys to her girdle. She looked fine and stately with the braided headdress in her gown of saffron colour. Elaine wore a dress dyed green, and Morgaine her red gown. They went down the stair, gathering before the church. Gawain saluted Morgaine, saying, Kinswoman, and bowed to the queen. Beyond him she saw a familiar face, and frowned a little, trying to remember where she had seen that knight before. Tall, burly, bearded, almost as blond as a Saxon or Northman. Then she remembered Balin's foster brother, Balin. She bowed to him coldly. He was a stupid, narrow-minded fool. Yet even so, he was bound by the sacred ties of fosterkin to Vivian, who was her nearest and dearest kinswoman. I greet you, Sir Balin. He scowled a little, but remembered his manners. He was wearing a frayed and ragged surcoat. Clearly he'd been travelling long, and hadn't yet had time to dress and refresh himself.
Are you going to Mass, Lady Morgaine? Have you renounced the fiends of Avalon and left that evil place, and accepted our Lord and Saviour Christ, Lady?
Morgaine found the question an offence, but didn't say so. With a careful smile, she said, I'm going to Mass to see our kinsman Gareth knighted. As she hoped, it changed Berlin's direction. Gawain's little brother. Balin and I knew him less well than the others, he said.
It's hard to think of him as a man. In my mind, he's always the little lad who frightened the horses at Arthur's wedding, and came near to having Galahad killed.
Morgaine recalled that was Lancelot's real name. No doubt the pious Balin was too proud to use any other. Balin bowed to her, and went on into the church. Morgaine, following with Guinevere, watched him, frowning. There was the light of fanaticism about his face, and she was just as well pleased that Vivian wasn't here, although both the lady's sons were here, Lancelot and Balin, and they could certainly prevent any real trouble. The church had been decorated with flowers, and the people, too, in their brilliant holiday dress, looked like massed flowers. Gareth had been dressed in a white linen robe, and Lancelot, in crimson, knelt beside him, beautiful and grave. Morgaine thought, the fair and the dark, the white and the crimson. And then another comparison occurred to her. Gareth, happy and innocent, joyous at this initiation, and Lancelot, sorrowful and tormented. Yet, as he knelt, listening to the priest reading the Pentecost story, he looked calm and altogether unlike the tortured man who had poured out his soul to her.
And when the day of Pentecost was done, they were all gathered together in one place, and suddenly out of the sky came the sound of a violent wind which filled the whole house where they were staying. And there appeared tongues as of fire, which divided and sat on them, one to each. And they were all filled with the holy breath, and they began to speak in other languages, as the Spirit gave them to utter. Now there were living in Jerusalem Jews of the strict observance, from every race under the sky. And when this sound happened, the whole multitude came together and were confused, because every one of them heard these men speaking in his own language.
And they were as men driven out of their minds, saying to one another,
Look,
Are all these preachers not Galileans? And how are we hearing them, each one of us, in our own native languages? Parthians and Medes and Elamites and men out of Mesopotamia, both Judea and Cappadocia, Asia, both Phrygia and Pamphylia, and visitors from Rome, Jews and Cretans and Arabs. But we all hear them talking in our own languages. And they were all astounded, asking one another, "What does this mean?" But others said mockingly, "These men have drunk too much of sweet new wine so early in the day." Then Peter the Apostle raised his voice and said to them, "Men of Judea, and all of you, listen to my words. These men are not drunk, as you imagine, since it is only the third hour, but it is as the prophet Joel has written. God says, in the last days of the world, I will send out my spirit into all flesh, and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams." Morgaine, kneeling quietly in her place, thought, why, it was the sight that came upon them, and they didn't understand it. Nor had they cared to understand. To them it only proved that their God was greater than other gods. Now the priest was talking of the last days of the world, how God would pour out his gifts of vision and prophecy. But she wondered if any of these Christians knew how commonplace all these gifts were, after all. Anyone could master these powers when he had demonstrated that he could use them suitably. But that didn't include trying to astonish the common people with silly miracles. The Druids used their powers to do good privately, not to collect crowds. When the faithful approached the rail for their shared bread and wine in commemoration, Morgaine shook her head and stepped back, though Guinevere tried to draw her forward. She wasn't a Christian, and she wouldn't pretend. Afterward, outside the church, she watched the ceremony where Lancelot drew his sword and touched Gareth with it, his strong and musical voice clear and solemn. "Arise now, Gareth, companion of Arthur, and brother now to all of us here, and to every knight of this company. Forget not to defend your king, and to live at peace with all knights of Arthur, and all peaceful people everywhere. But remember always to make war against evil, and to defend those who are in need of protection." Morgaine recalled Arthur receiving Excalibur at the hands of the lady. She glanced at him, and wondered if he remembered too, and if this was why he had instituted this solemn pledge and ceremonial, so that the young men made knights in his company might have some such right to remember. Perhaps this wasn't, after all, a mockery of the holy mysteries, but an attempt to preserve them as best he could. But why must it take place in the church? Would a day come when he would refuse it to any who were not pledged Christian? During the service, Gareth and his cousin and sponsor Lancelot had been first to receive Holy Communion, even before the king. Was this not putting this order of knighthood into the church as a Christian rite, one of their sacraments? Lancelot had no right to do this. He wasn't himself qualified to confirm the mysteries on any other. Was this a profanation, or an honest attempt to bring the mysteries into the hearts and souls of all the court? Morgaine didn't know. After the service, there was an interval before the games. Morgaine greeted Gareth and gave him her gift, a fine dyed leather belt on which he could carry sword and dagger. He bent down to kiss her. "Ah, you have grown, little one. I doubt if your mother would know you." "It happens to all of us, dear cousin," Gareth said, smiling. "I doubt you would know your own son." Then he was surrounded by the other knights, jostling and crowding to welcome and congratulate him. Arthur clasped his hands,
and spoke to him in a way that made Gareth's fair skin glow. Morgaine saw that Guinevere was watching her sharply.
Morgaine, what was it Gareth said? Your son?
Morgaine said sharply, If I've never told you, sister-in-law, it is because I respected your religion. I bore a son to the goddess from the Beltane rites. He's being fostered at Lot's court. I haven't seen him since he was weaned. Are you content, or will you spread my secret everywhere?
No, said Guinevere, turning pale. What sorrow for you to be parted from your babe.
I'm sorry, Morgaine, and I will not tell even Arthur.
He is Christian, too, and he would be shocked.
You don't know how shocked he would be, Morgaine thought grimly.
Her heart was pounding. Could Guinevere be trusted with her secret?
There were too many now who knew it.
The trumpet had been blown for the beginning of the games. Arthur had agreed not to take the lists, for no one wanted to attack his king. But one side of the mock battle was to be led by Lancelot as the king's champion, and the other fell by lot to Uriens of North Wales, a hearty man, well past middle age, but still strong and muscular. At his side was his second son, Accolon. Morgaine noted that as Accolon drew on his gloves, his wrists were revealed. Around them coiled blue tattooed serpents. He was an initiate of Dragon Island. Guinevere had been jesting, no doubt, about marrying her to old Uriens. But Accolon, there was a proper man, perhaps, except for Lancelot, the handsomest young man on the field. Morgaine found herself admiring his skill at arms. Agile and well-built, he moved with the natural ease of a man to whom such exercises come readily, and who has been handling weapons since boyhood. Sooner or later, Arthur would wish to give her in marriage. If he should offer her to Accolon, would she say no? After a time, her attention began to wander. Most of the other women had long since lost interest, and were gossiping about feats of prowess they had heard of. Some were playing at dice in their sheltered seats. A few were watching with animation, having wagered ribbons or pins or small coins on their husbands or brothers or sweethearts.
"It's hardly worth wagering," said one discontentedly, "for we all know that Lancelot will win the day. He always does."
"Are you saying he does so unfairly?"
Elaine asked with a flare of resentment, and the strange woman said,
"By no means. But he should at these games stay on the sidelines, since no one can stand against him."
Morgaine laughed. "I have seen young Gareth there, Gawain's brother, throw him arse over head in the dirt," she said, "and he took that in good part too. But if you want sport, I will wager you a crimson silk ribbon that Accolon wins a prize, even over Lancelot."
"Done,"
said the woman, and Morgaine rose in her seat. She said, "I have no taste for watching men batter each other for sport. There has been enough of fighting that I am weary even of the sound of it." She nodded to Guinevere.
"Sister, may I go back to the hall and see that all is in order for the feasting?"
Guinevere nodded permission, and Morgaine slid down at the back of the seats and made her way toward the main courtyard. The great gates were open, and guarded only by a few who had no wish to attend the mock battles. Morgaine started toward the castle, and never knew what intuition it was that sent her back toward the gates, or why she stood watching a pair of approaching riders who were arriving late for the first festivities. But as they came nearer, her skin began to prickle with foreboding, and then she began to run as they rode through the gates. And now she was weeping.
"Vivian,"
she cried out, and then stopped, afraid to throw herself into her kinswoman's arms. Instead, she knelt on the dusty ground and bent her head. The soft, familiar voice, unchanged, just as she had heard it in dreams, said gently, "Morgaine, my darling child, it is you. How I have longed to meet with you all these years. Come, come, darling, you need not ever kneel to me." Morgaine raised her face, but she was trembling too hard to rise. Vivian, her face shrouded in grey veils, was bending over her. She put out a hand, and Morgaine kissed it, and then Vivian pulled her close into an embrace. "Darling, it has been so long," she said, and Morgaine struggled helplessly not to cry. "I've been so troubled about you," Vivian said, holding tight to Morgaine's hand as they walked toward the entrance. "From time to time I would see you a little in the pool. But I am old. I can use the sight but seldom. Yet I knew you lived. You were not dead in childbirth, nor far over the seas. I long to look on your face, little one." Her voice was as tender as if there had never been any quarrel between them, and Morgaine was flooded by the old affection. All the people of the court are at the games. Morgause's youngest son was made knight and companion this morning, she said. "I think I must have known that you were coming." And then she recalled the moment of the sight last night. Indeed, she had known. "Why have you come here, mother?"
"I thought you had heard how Arthur betrayed Avalon," Vivian said. "Kevin has spoken to him in my name, but without avail. So I have come to stand here before his throne and demand justice. In Arthur's name, the lesser kings are forbidding the old worship. Sacred groves have been despoiled. Even on the land where Arthur's queen rules by inheritance, and Arthur has done nothing."
"Guinevere is over-pious," Morgaine murmured, and felt her lip curl in disdain. "So pious! Yet taking her husband's cousin and champion to her bed with the sanction of that too pious king." But a priestess of Avalon did not babble the secrets of the bedchamber if they came into her keeping. It seemed that Vivian read her thoughts, for she said,
"Nay, Morgaine, but a time might come when some secret knowledge might give me a weapon to force Arthur to his sworn duty. One hold, indeed, I have over him. Though for your sake, child, I would not use it before his court. Tell me—"
She glanced around.
"No, not here. Take me where we may talk together in secret, and let me refresh myself and make myself seemly to stand before Arthur at his great feast."
Morgaine took her to the room she shared with Guinevere's ladies, who were all at the games. The servants were gone too, so she herself fetched Vivian water for washing, and wine to drink, and helped her to change her dusty, travel-worn clothing.
"I met with your son in Lothian," Vivian said.
"Kevin told me."
The old pain clutched at her heart. So Vivian had gotten what she wanted of her, after all, a son of the doubled royal lines for Avalon.
"Will you make him a druid, then, for Avalon?"
"It is too soon to know what stuff he has in him," said Vivian. "Too long, I fear, was he left in Morgause's keeping. But whether or no, he must be reared in Avalon, and loyal to the old gods, so that if Arthur is false to his oath, we may remind him that there is a son of the Pendragon's blood to take his place. We will have no king turned apostate and tyrant, forcing that god of slaves and sin and shame down the throats of our people. We set him on Uther's throne. We can bring him down if we must, and all the more readily if there is one of the old royal line of Avalon, a son of the goddess, to take his place. Arthur is a good king. I would be reluctant to make such threats. But if I must, I will. The goddess orders my actions."
Morgaine shuddered. Would her child be the instrument of his father's death? She turned her face resolutely from the sight. I do not think Arthur will be this false to Avalon.
The goddess grant he may not, Vivian said. But even so, the Christians would not accept a son gotten in that rite. We must keep a place near the throne for Gwydion, so that he may be his father's heir. And one day we will have a king born of Avalon again. The Christians, mark you, Morgaine, would think your son born out of sin. But before the goddess he is of the purest royalty of all. Mother and father born of her lineage, sacred, not evil. And he must come to think himself so, not be contaminated by priests who would tell him his begetting and birth were shameful.
She looked Morgaine straight in the eye.
You still think it shameful?
Morgaine lowered her head. Always you could read my heart, kinswoman.
Igraine's is the fault, said Vivian, and mine that I left you at Uther's court 7 years. The day I knew you, priestess born, I should have had you from there. You are priestess of Avalon, darling child. Why came you never back?
She turned, the comb in her hand, her long faded hair falling along her face. Morgaine whispered, tears forcing themselves through the barrier of her tight eyes. I cannot. I cannot, Vivian. I tried. I couldn't find the way. And all the humiliation and shame of that washed over her, and she wept. Vivian put down the comb and caught Morgaine to her breast, holding her, rocking and soothing her like a child.
Darling, my own darling girl, do not cry, do not cry. If I had known, child, I would have come to you.
Don't cry now.
I shall myself take you back. We will go together when I have given Arthur my message. I will take you with me and go, before he gets it into his head to marry you off to some braying Christian ass. Yes, yes, child, you shall come back to Avalon. We will go together.
She wiped Morgaine's wet face on her own veil.
Come now, help me to dress myself to stand before my kinsman the High King.
Morgaine drew a deep breath. Yes, let me braid your hair, mother. She tried to laugh. This morning I did the Queen's hair.
Vivian held her away and said in great anger, Has Arthur put you, priestess of Avalon and princess in your own right, to waiting hand and foot on his queen?
No, no, said Morgaine quickly. I am honoured as high as the Queen herself. I dressed Guinevere's hair this day out of friendship. She is as likely to do mine, or to lace my gown, as sisters do. Vivian sighed with relief.
I would not have you dishonoured. You are the mother of Arthur's son. He must learn to honour you as such, and so must the daughter of Leodegrance.
No, Morgaine cried. No, I beg of you. Arthur mustn't know, not before the whole court. Listen to me, mother, she pleaded. All these folk are Christian. Would you have me shamed before them all? Vivian said implacably,
They must learn not to think shame of holy things.
But the Christians have power over all this land, Morgaine said, and you cannot change their thinking with a few words. And in her heart she wondered, had advancing age driven Vivian out of her wits? There was no way simply to proclaim that the old laws of Avalon should be set up again, and 200 years of Christianity be overthrown. The priests would drive her out of the court as a madwoman, and go on as before. Vivian must know enough of practical ruling to know this. And indeed, Vivian nodded and said,
You are right, we must work slowly.
but Arthur at least must be reminded of his promise to protect Avalon. And I will speak to him, in secret, one day, about the child. We cannot proclaim it aloud among the ignorant.
Then Morgaine helped Vivian to arrange her hair and to dress herself in the stately robes of a priestess of Avalon.